following podcast has adult themes and some strong language.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of season 2 of Excuse the Jazz. Yes, you get an extra ep this time. That's only because birthdays just went on and on this year. So think of this as a bonus. The epilogue, as it were. Well, not yet. There's still more to tell you. I promise there'll be an epilogue of sorts at the end. You already heard part of it in episode 1. The epilogue, though, doesn't mean it's the end. I mean, my life will still go on. I may even keep recording this and then send them out at an indeterminate date in the future. Maybe I'll be 90 and still be saying, my name is Jessica J. Garner and this is my life. Although I haven't said that for a while. That was beaten out of me. I can take constructive criticism. Do you know what else I can take? 5-star reviews on Apple and Spotify podcasts. Intent. As you can guess, this will be the last one for a while. Forever? I don't know. I'm hoping life calms down a bit now because I can't keep up with the pace of this last month. Thought I'd be slowing down at this age. Instead, it feels like there's still so much more to do. This week, I'll be talking about the future. The thing about the future is it's not written yet. But as English novelist John Galsworthy said, if you don't think about the future, you cannot have one. I'm at the point where it became clear why I've chosen this subject, but can actually say very little about it, so should we just crack on? American author and guru Anthony J. DeAngelo said, run to meet the future, or it's going to run you down. I feel like that's happened anyway. When I was made redundant that Tuesday and I updated my LinkedIn status that I was looking for new opportunities, I started scrolling through to see what was out there. Apart from seeing an extraordinary amount of people telling me how successful they are, I didn't really see much and I realised I was doom scrolling. I switched off my laptop. I checked my phone to see if there was any word from my friends. Former friends? No, I really needed them to be my friends. Put on the TV to see what programme I was in the middle of binge watching. Couldn't find one and there was so many I wanted to start but didn't have the energy. So I just stuck an episode of Sunny on, another of my go-to programmes. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is a programme about truly awful people living truly awful lives. I related. I realised that my next episode was season 3, episode 5, where Dee smashes her head into a car while trying to steal shoes and that always made me laugh. I never got there though. I laid on the sofa and must have fallen asleep pretty quickly. I woke up, I don't know how long later, with my phone going, my front door being knocked and the bell being rang. It was a healthy dose of banging on the window too. In my half-drowsy state, it took a second to realise what was happening, but made my way to the front door. I was so pleased to see Ems and Izzy there, but in my half-awake state, I'd forgotten at that moment they might hate me. Finally, Em said, and she barged her way through the door. She had a small hall door with her and she dropped it in the hallway before going into the kitchen to put the kettle on. I was so confused. Were they going to finish with me? Like grown-ups, just say we don't like you and we go our separate ways? Izzy looked at the TV and saw that Netflix were trying to advertise their shows and turned it off. I was in trouble. Looked in the mirror and wiped the mascara away from under my eyes. There was no saving my hair. Em's brought in biscuits and I thought this is going to be very civilised. You're a fucking disaster, Jess. Have a hobnob. Izzy told me to sit on the sofa. What was happening? Em's brought in hot drinks and placed them on the coffee table. Then they sat either side of me. They could kill me now and no one would know. Em's reached for one hand and Izzy the other. We've been talking, Em said. And we are worried sick about you. Tears came from nowhere and I didn't know what was happening. I didn't do this. This is what I'm talking about, Em said. This is not you. I apologised. I didn't know what I was apologising for. Was it the podcast or crying like a 3-year-old who's just been told they can't have ice cream? Izzy shook her head. Oh, Jess, it's us that should be apologising to you. We didn't get it. Ems jumped in. We didn't get that you weren't as resilient as you made out, and much of the things we did hurt you. I shook my head. No, I told everyone that I called your son Samuel. Ems just laughed. Yes, and I love that. You can say my son is in league with the devil, because sometimes I think the same. You didn't mention all the times you've gone above and beyond for him. Oh, my daughter. I've had to listen to him all week tell me how cool his Aunt Jess is, how he gave him the best birthday. 250 quid I spent and all you did was organise a game of football. It was a good game, though, Izzy countered. Plus I bought him ice cream, I added. This is what I mean, Jess. You saw he was hurting and you just dealt with it. Gave him what he needed. I think you're flipping cool too. You put out a podcast, for goodness sake. And you didn't tell us, Izzy said. Hung my head again. I saw a tissue being placed in my hand and immediately used it. I'm so sorry, I said again. It started another round of tears. No, Izzy said. You should have been able to tell us. This is on us. You just didn't get how serious you were about writing. I know you even went to the retreat, but that's on us. There's just so much to unpack, Em said. So we're going to do it now. It's fine, I said. You don't need to. No, said Izzy. You are lovely, beautiful, special, and I can't believe you like us. Which is what I said about them in the podcast, which you knew, right? And we love you too, Em said. Izzy pretended to cough. I'm speaking for me. And they were still trying to make me laugh, even though I felt my world was ending. They laid me on the sofa. Em's put a cushion on her lap and instructed me to lay down, and she stroked my hair. Lizzie placed my legs over her lap, and she was lightly stroking them. I talked and talked and talked. I talked about how I felt. I talked about everything that had happened in the last few weeks, much of what I told you, the parts I didn't. I talked about it all. When I couldn't talk anymore, I felt a little better. Despite everything life was thrown at me, these people were there. They'd been there longer than they hadn't been there, and they were still there. Actually, what I felt was lucky. Former First Lady and all-round wise woman Eleanor Roosevelt said, "The future belongs to those that believe in the beauty of their dreams." Now she should have been president. What am I saying? A woman running America? We're still in the dark ages. That night, Em stayed with me. She slept in my bed. I argue this, but Samuel was at her mother's and Simon was at his. I never pushed this. Em said that now was not the time. Around 2 a.m, I sat upright and had a mini panic attack. I didn't have a job, and it was my fault. Okay, I just put off the inevitable, but still. I could be going to work tomorrow, be seeing Niles. Instead, I had nothing. As I started to spiral, I felt Em sit up next to me and we talked it through. Em's had booked the day off, so we went out for breakfast. Well, it was more like brunch when we got there. We got our nails manicured and then we went to watch Tom Cruise being Maverick, complete with popcorn. When we got home tea time, we were hungry, and so Izzy came around and we had pizza. I had to say goodbye to Em then. Completely selfish of her to have a child, but there you go. What I didn't know was that Izzy was staying. Izzy and I watched movies and ate more pizza. She caught me looking at my emails on my phone and I got told off. She told me I needed to relax, but I felt okay. That was until the early hours of Thursday morning when it all caught up with me again and I started to cry. Izzy just listened to me and when I calmed down, told me I was amazing because I saved a load of jobs for ungrateful arseholes. And if I could figure that out, I could figure anything out. Didn't feel like it. Izzy had booked the time off work too, so we went to breakfast and then to the hairdressers. Now, I didn't know about this, but Izzy had booked me in for a colour or highlights and a cut. She even insisted it would be her treat, which was ridiculous, because it was so expensive. Izzy argued that her and Jason James saved a fortune on the previous Friday when Niles paid for a meal, so it was only fair. Couldn't believe that was less than a week ago. Felt more like a lifetime ago. I opted for highlights because I hadn't had them done since before the pandemic, and I was doing my colour with home kits myself. Izzy told the stylist what I needed, then insisted we both had champagne. It was always fun going out with Izzy, and I realised we hadn't done anything like this in over 2 years. The pandemic had taken away so much of my life, and I hadn't realised. The hairdressers were like a playpen. They loved her. I mean, who couldn't? She knew everyone, and people just kept coming over and talking to her. And because of that, me. After Izzy ordered more champagne and we both sat with our foils in our hair waiting for the colour to develop, she leaned into me and almost whispered, "Can I tell you something about Americans?" I nodded, but I was pretty sure I was immersed in American culture more than she was. "Americans don't hug and kiss people on the cheek in a friendly way." I said something glib-like when in Wales. I did look it up afterwards, though, and it wasn't strictly true. It's just more common in Europe. She changed tact. "Can I tell you something about Niles?" "Of course," I said, waiting for her to say something stupid. Like he had bad breath or BO, something that would make me laugh. She leaned closer and said, "He's not that good looking." I laughed because she said something I had expected her to. The stylist handed us our champagne and I was ready to talk about something else. "No," she said, "I'm serious." Now that was weird. I said from the beginning I did not want a Niles slagging off competition because apart from being a complete arse to me on the final day in the office, I hadn't really done anything wrong. I looked at her quizzically, so she continued. "I mean that you kept saying he was so good looking as if he was out of your league, but he was firmly actually in your league. In fact, I would say it was a good match." It was really sweet of her, but completely untrue. I followed along, though, and said, "What, like you and Jason James?" And she nodded. "And Ems and Simon?" Izzy screwed up her nose and made gagging noises. "No, he's the worst of the worst of all arseholes. It wasn't just me," I realised. Done something to Ems, so I questioned Izzy. She said she wasn't supposed to tell me yet, but Simon had threatened to hit Ems one day after a lunchtime drinking session. Izzy then changed the subject. "I don't know who said this, not because I'm too lazy to find out, just because nobody knows it seems, but it really struck a chord with me. Once you've glimpsed the world as it might be, it is impossible to live any more complacent in the world as it is." When my mini makeover was complete and we had a couple of cocktails, because it would be rude not to, we came back to my place and I insisted I should check my emails, because there might be something important, like they couldn't deliver my UPS parcel or I'd won a new Apple iPhone. They were there, but I also had an email from someone I used to work for. Probably 7 or 8 years ago, asking if we could get online for a chat. I emailed back immediately saying of course and I was free any time, and that any time became 10 a.m. the next morning. I insisted Izzy could leave now. I felt all cried out and now a new woman thanks to my new hairstyle and manicure. It wasn't a complete lie. I couldn't believe this gorgeous hair with the honey and caramel tones bouncing with curls was actually on my head. I was told if I wake up in the night again, I should ring either or both of them. Didn't matter what time. They would answer and I believed if I needed them, I would. I woke up the next morning. Did you see what I said there? Woke up. I reckon I had about 5 hours sleep and felt so much better for it. Anyway, I woke up and was on a mission. I was going to chat to my old manager. Her name was Dawn. I mean, it's not, but let's play it safe here. Then spend about 2 hours looking at jobs. After that, some lunch, and then I was going to write. As I was officially unemployed, I could technically call myself a full-time writer now. I would be so happy though when I get the draft of my book done, if only so I could see how absolute crap it was and start again. I checked myself and did a mini sound check on a personal meeting on Zoom. Am I the only one that does that? Then I double-clicked the link Dawn had sent me for the chat. I thought, the last time I did this was to speak to Niles in the US, and immediately shut down that thought. On the dock, Dawn's face filled the screen. Jessica, how wonderful to see you. You look well. Thank you, I replied. Did she mean fat? So do you. I did mean fat. Actually, people who say you look well when they mean fat are usually dumb as fuck. I guess you know why I got in touch, Dawn announced, but seriously, I didn't have a clue. I only hope I got in first, she continued. You did, I smiled, but I was dumbfounded. I'm glad, she continued, because I want to be the first. I'm desperately looking for someone, then had a conversation with OM, and I didn't know they knew each other, and then what he wrote on LinkedIn and the comments after it, I had to make you an offer. That was it. All I heard, offer. She offered me a job. She wasn't. She was offering me a consultancy role, initially for 6 months, but the money was good, better than my former annual salary. There was just one slight problem. Dawn was now based in Reading, and she would need me to be. Now, I know truly little about Reading. I've never been there. I know it's the last stop from London Paddington when you catch the train from Cardiff, which you meant, great, it was easy to get to from Cardiff. And this is what was tempting me. It was only 30 minutes from central London, but that also meant it was hugely expensive. Dawn threw in at the end that a partner is an estate agent and has the perfect flat close to the business that I might be interested in. You know how everything just seems too good to be true? This was definitely too good to be true. I asked her to put everything in the form of a contract and I would consider it. Because any moment now, someone like Catherine or Numbers Guy would pop up to have a good laugh at me. She said she would need a decision by close of play. But it made no odds, I couldn't. I have a house. A life. Okay, I have a house. She noticed my hesitance and took a deep breath. Okay, she said. I'll pay your moving expenses. Then she was gone. I immediately went into LinkedIn to see what the OM had said. He gave me a glowing recommendation, what I had done and how I'd taken the fall to save the factory. He put it more eloquently though, and it was really lovely. Been up 24 hours and a royal day, quite a few comments wishing me well, saying they'd be in touch. These were complete strangers, so I understand why Dawn thought she had to get in quick. It was crazy, and so I took screenshots. Immediately DM'd the OM to thank him. He replied to say he was glad I'd seen it because he'd had an email to take it down. Obviously, Dawn was keen. The email came within the hour from Dawn. I read through the contract and my immediate thought was, it looks great, but I just can't. What if I'm terrible and I'm fired? What if I hate it there? What will happen to my house? What if? What if? What if? It wasn't possible. Then I read the email Dawn sent with it. She put a link to that flat that her partner was renting. She said she'd sort the deposit out, but if I paid 6 months in advance, I could take 20% discount. It would make no odds because I wasn't going, but somehow I clicked the link. I loved it. It reminded me of Niles' apartment in Cardiff. He even had an instant boiling water tap. I could see myself living there, except it was stupid expensive. It would take all my redundancy, plus some to pay in advance, and I had no idea how much rent I would get on my house. I still needed to pay the mortgage. What happened next was ridiculous, because I hit reply to tell Dawn no. Instead, I took the contract, inserted a digital signature, and sent it back with an email telling Dawn I was looking forward to working with her, and then stared at the wall for a good hour. Renowned self-help author Wayne Dyer said, "Go for it now. The future is promised to no one." Yeah, and especially not at my age. I never wrote a word that afternoon. I had a lot to do. I was starting work next week in a city I didn't live in. Heck, in a country I didn't even live in. Okay, I was being a bit dramatic there with the country. The first port of call was estate agents. That was fun. And that's all I've got to say on that. However, I found out that I would have enough to cover the mortgage and some of the rent in Reading, so I was pretty chilled about it. If you called 3 panic attacks and eating an entire tub of ice cream chilled, I asked Ems and Izzy to come around and then put two bottles of Prosecco in the fridge. We were either celebrating or getting very drunk. Ems and Izzy were hugely surprised but incredibly happy for me. For a change, I discussed all my fears, the biggest one being that I was going to be unemployed if I didn't take the role. Izzy's concern was about Niles. I told her if she wanted to catch up with Niles, she could catch him every weekday morning on Channel 4 with his brother, Frasier. Ems hung back after Izzy left. She asked if she could move in my house when I left. I wanted to help, but I couldn't afford not to rent it out. Em said she would pay, and what would I consider fair? I'm going to be brief on this, because obviously Simon wasn't impressed when I talked about him on here. I haven't talked to him since that night, and I'm not ready to, but Em's has told me he's really sorry, and he's gutted he did it. It was the final straw for Em's, and they're separating. Simon is seeking help for his alcohol, whatever it is, and I wish him luck with it. Just away from me. I did my sums and gave Ems a figure. It would cover what I needed, I wouldn't have to pay estate agent fees, and I had someone I trust here. And Samuel. Sorry, Samuel, no more. Simon is not welcome here anytime. I wouldn't have to change anything, and I could work out how I felt when the contract was over. The following day, I had to transfer the money for the flat in Reading. And in my account was 6 months' rent for my house from Simon. Didn't know they were going to pay in advance, and it was so welcome. That was when I felt my first pang of excitement. I was going to Reading. Comedian, author and genius George Carlin said, "The future will soon be a thing of the past." That really doesn't help my existential crisis. This is sort of an epilogue. I'm sat here now with boxes around me. It's not much really. Ems has decided to keep the furniture, so all I'm clearing is my wardrobe, drawers, etc. She's been adamant about what pictures could stay up and have to come down. What a time to find out she doesn't think I have taste. Fortunately, a lot of this stuff can go up in the attic, and I have to decide what I'm taking to Reading. I've leased a car because the company car had gone back, and thank goodness, really, I hated that thing. I thought I was hasty in selling my car when I got the company one, but there's a lesson in there somewhere. I wanted to fit in some things that didn't organically arise in the retelling of this, before anyone goes, "Well, that didn't make sense." The reason people seemed to find out about the podcast at the same time was that person in the restaurant with Ben that night did know about it. His wife had found it on an online search, and because she saw the podcast was in Cardiff, she took a listen. The wife works with Simon and went to him about it. The guy who was friends with Ben then told him this amusing anecdote, not realising that Ben was Ben. That makes sense. That's a big coincidence, you might say, and it might be until you realise with the Cardiff population of 485,000 people, Ben probably knows about 484,000 of them, which is why I call Ben instead of his actual name. Plus, there's such thing as a coincidence. That's why it's a word in the English language. I don't actually take my grandmother's head in a jar every time I go to London. It's a ring of hers, an engagement ring. I wear it all the time, not just on various visits to London. It's not worth much monetary-wise, but obviously worth everything to me. I don't know why I feel a need to explain this. Like I would actually carry around a head in a jar. Safe and sound in my basement. I haven't even begun to process what happened with Simon. I didn't tell you in full what he said. There was worse. I think you get the gist of how horrific it was. What I do know was it wasn't sexual. He didn't touch me apart from what I said. He did it to scare me and upset me, and a good job too. It's a tough one because I trusted him. I've told Ems that he's not allowed anywhere near me or my house, and she agreed. And how will I know when I'm away? Because it's Ems. I know Big Ben is not a clock or the clock tower. The clock tower's called the Elizabeth Tower, and it's a bell that's often referred to as Big Ben. However, this is disputed also. There are at least two theories where the name Ben comes from, And as it's attached to the House of the Parliament, that doesn't really surprise me. Who knows the truth anymore? Dawn requested I change my LinkedIn status immediately that I was working. She then wrote a lovely piece on her LinkedIn about welcoming me, which linked to a website page. The OM was forced to take down what he said, but I have the screenshots for safekeeping. I'm getting so sentimental in my old age. I bet it's a menopause. Izzy Nems has given me feedback on the podcast, which is why this is slightly different. Maybe I'll release a bonus podcast one day with all of what we can learn from TVs at SCON. They also know my pseudonyms, which is why Izzy and Ems now call Niles, Niles. Ems was disappointed how much I was swearing in season one. I hope I've doubled down enough on swearing for season two. Plus, if I'm going to quote someone, it would be unfair to omit the swear words. Could you imagine if they did that to Billy Connolly? For example, people who point at their wrist while asking for the time. I know where my watch is, pal. Where the expletive deleted is yours. Do I point at my crotch when I ask where the toilet is? Actually, that's still good. Just not the way I say it. Anyway, lose the swearing. Fuck me, no. Not on my watch. In all fairness, Ems and Izzy has not asked to hear this before the release, and trust, I have been true to events. They said they couldn't wait to hear it, which is proper flipping lovely. I still can't get them to rate me though on Apple Podcasts. I haven't heard from nearly, Niles, nor expect to. It was a lovely reminder though that I'm actually human. I've tried to present what happened fairly, which is hard because there was a lot more going on for me than it was for him. I mean in our relationship or however you define it, not in life. He was going through a tough time too. We discussed at length things like grief, aging, lost opportunities, but it wasn't going in here. He was never anything but super generous with me though. He gave me the benefit of the doubt when people hated me in work and listened to my proposals. What hasn't come across was how intelligent he is, as well as being super geeky. Part of the reason that he listened to me is because he got it straight away. As you can guess by this, I have a habit of saying 50 words when 10 would have done. I couldn't really ask for more than that. I still don't understand why he was so angry with me in the final day in the office. I'm disappointed he couldn't find me himself, but I think the fact we got on for the rest of the time was a lovely bonus, and I'm grateful for that. I do blame him though for the punch in the face, and I still may sue. As an aside, if you don't think I didn't look in the mirror every day and wish I was more Ems or Izzy attractive than just non-attractive, you'd be wrong. I felt like that in work where everyone hated me, on the writer's retreat, on the London premiere, every single day with Niles and every day since. It's been tough facing the outside world again. I haven't talked about it though because apparently I'm too tough on myself. Like if you don't talk about it, it means it's not happening. Or more importantly, not true. I also haven't finished the first draft of my book yet, which is frustrating because it's something I want to knuckle down and do. Millie from the writer's retreat got back in touch about doing the imposter syndrome course. And I told her I could, face to face, because guess what? It's in London. When the rest of the group found out I was going to be more central, there was a lot of good cheer. Lawrence, whose film premiere I went to, has told me about more networking events we need to go on. I've got a lot to thank for that writer's retreat because I don't think I would have been so forthcoming with Niles. I think I would have given in, thought who was I to even try. So I've got a lot to thank for it. The nicest message I got was from one of the male members of the group asked me for coffee. And it was a DM, not in the main chat, which suggests there's more to it. He said I'd love to. Maybe Millie is right and I'm not dead yet. My final quote is from a wise visionary and sage who said, "Your future hasn't been written yet. No one's has. Your future is what you make it. So make it a good one." Thank you, Dr. Emmett Brown. That's it then. Not so much an ending because it's my life and I'm still narrating it. It's a new chapter for sure and one I'm terrified about. As Tim said in the office, my life is not over. Come back here in 10 years' time. See how I'm doing then. Because I could be married with children. you don't know, there will definitely be no children. That's enough from me. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've got to the end of 8 episodes, I sincerely thank you. It just leaves me to say, please come back. Not needy or anything, but okay, do what you want. Also, a lot of this stuff is on the internet. And did you know the internet can lie? You can find me on Instagram at excusethejess. And let's not be strangers.
Excuse the Jess was written and performed by Jackie J. Sarah. It is a Deliciously Bright production. If you enjoyed this, please click follow and give us a 5-star review or donate via Buy Me a Coffee. All details, including full credits, can be found on the website excusethejess.com.